You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Our regular interview with Dr. Shane Reddy is back. Today, Nika spoke to him about inflation and the labour shortage.
So I just wanted to start off today with inflation. We are looking at the highest inflation rates that we've seen in, I think, 30 years now. Nicola Willis came out and said that the government is sort of denying the homegrown issue behind skyrocketing rates. And I was wondering if you could maybe take us through that homegrown issue she's referring to.
So our concerns here are that there, as you say, we have inflation at 6.9%, which is the highest that it's been for 30 years. And the question is, and this is where we somewhat have that disagreement with the government, what can we control and what can't we? And the government is wanting to say, look, this is all offshore. This is all due to the Ukraine. This is all due to COVID logistics chain getting fuel onshore. That this is all around offshore issues. The argument we'd make is, well, you know, one of the biggest contributors to inflation is actually housing and rental costs, and there is a significant domestic policy contribution to that. And so we think that there are domestic policies that the government does have control over, including control over the, or not control over, but the advice and guidance to the Reserve Bank. But things like a housing policy are a contributor to inflation, and the government does have control over that. So we think there are tools they can pull, levers they can pull, that might address that significant cost of living. I think another part to that is the workforce. You know, we're getting wage inflation as well, even though just at the moment wages aren't meeting the cost of living, which is part of the problem. And if we look back at that, part of wage inflation is because of our border settings, which is totally in the hands of government. And our border settings have been so restrictive that we have a labour shortage, which in turn has increased wages, and that's put a wage inflation into the inflation remit. So these are some of the areas that the government actually does have control over, but we think they should be doing a better job. And of course, coming up is the budget. And what we know is that if we put more money into an economy, where there are already constraints, and by definition, you increase inflation. And so while we're not saying to the government there aren't areas that don't need money, what we're saying is we want to make sure that it's put in the areas that really matter, that make sense, that don't unnecessarily increase inflation.
Now, we'll get to the labour shortage soon. Firstly, looking at housing costs and the housing market, I mean, I understand that the lowering of interest rates by the Reserve Bank was supported by National at the time, was it not?
Yes, that's correct. We were in that environment where to stimulate the economy, lowering interest rates was the action that the Reserve Bank took.
Right. And just going to what you were saying, you believe that spending needs to be done in different areas of the economy. Would you be able to outline some of those areas?
Yeah, Ken, not so much maybe in different areas, but smarter spending. So like in my own expert domain in health, I can tell you I would not be spending $500 million on layers and layers of bureaucracy and health reform. And what we know is, for example, that already through this government, there's been 14,000 new public servants added. And the question in health that I'd put to you is, show me a better outcome for that. Some people are happy to spend money in health. I get it, but show me the outcomes. And in fact, what we see is, by way of example, $1.9 billion in mental health, where even the Mental Health Foundation and the OAG, I believe, are saying we're not seeing the outcomes. So what we're looking for is smart spending in this upcoming budget, not just wanton spending.
Right. And is there anything that you would like to see the government doing now?
This is the dumbest time to be doing health reforms. Worst time ever. In the middle of a pandemic, you've got to be joking. And again, at $500 million of layers and layers of bureaucracy, that is inflationary, that is not good spending, that is poor spending, and I would much rather be spending them on hips, knees and cataracts.
Now, moving on to the country's labour shortage, Christopher Luxon has said that the government needs to be doing more to attract migrants into the country, as the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment has projected that around 50,000 New Zealanders are going to be leaving over the next year as we reconnect with the world. How do you want the government to start opening opening up the borders to more skilled migrants, especially in the wake of COVID and having been closed off for so long?
Yeah, indeed. So this is going to be a real dilemma. So we've already got a workforce shortage across a range of areas, and then that possibility of 50 to 100, 120,000 are sort of the numbers that that I'm seeing, who might then take their school and our investment in them offshore, which would only make this worse. Look, there's a couple of things we need to do here. First of all, our border settings need to be more attractive. We need to think about how we compete in the international space for a workforce, whether we need to think more carefully around pathways to residency, which are really important for people who are contemplating New Zealand, how we compete in that international space. I think we should also think for a minute about, before we say, oh, well, they're just going, the 50 to 120,000, let's call them, who are going offshore, we need to think about retention and maybe why they're going offshore. Is it because on May 5th last year, the government put a pay sector freeze on the public sector? I know the answer to part of this, because this is why ICU nurses, a number of ICU nurses, went offshore, because there was no pathway to wage increases when there's a public sector freeze. So let's just think about how we retain those who are leaving and identify the reasons they are leaving and what we might do better to retain them. But well, more welcoming for those coming onshore and competing in that international market. These are the sort of things we need to be doing. Now there's nothing new to this. In November last year, Andrew Little announced a program called Kiwi Help Jobs to bring critical care workers, vital resource, into New Zealand, a international recruitment program. Problem was, it wasn't until February the 7th until he actually started it, 4 months after this great big announcement. And the problem here is that as of about 3 weeks ago when I asked him, only three nurses had actually been employed. It was for around about $300,000, as I recall. And what that tells us is several things. First of all, late to the game. But secondly, here's that competition in the international market where we need to be seen to be welcoming. Are we welcoming? Are people going to come to New Zealand, for example, in health, if there's still a public sector freeze here?
Yes, and another thing that's been coming up is the parent visas, which got stopped during COVID. Are these all things that a national government would work on?
So Erica Stanford, who leads our immigration portfolio, has been working really hard and really strongly around split migrant families and the families of visa holders. And this is a piece of work that we've quite strongly talked to for a while now. And so the answer is we are encouraging and are supportive and are understanding of the families around the visa holders who in an ideal world need to join them.
I just want to talk about specific areas of concern in terms of the labour shortage.
Oh, the areas that I'm concerned about? Oh, several areas. First of all, clearly in health. And let's remember, a large number of the restrictions we've had and still have are around health workforce shortage, more specifically ICU nurses. But I'd put other things for you. With the pay equity claim that is going through, the aged and residential care sector tell me that the difference in workers in aged and residential care, nurses particularly, and DHBs will be between $22,000 to $30,000. What do we think is going to happen? Of course the workers will move from aged residential care into DHBs, and the aged residential care sector is already a thousand nurses down. So that's going to be a real challenge to us, and we're going to be hugely dependent on the overseas workforce to try and remediate that. So I'm concerned in health, obviously. I'm concerned in primary production. We know that potentially 20 to 30% of kiwi fruit crop may not be picked this year. That's going to have a significant impact. There has been some progress on RSE workers, again, maybe a little too late, but this is another area. Primary production is another area I'm very concerned. And then in our infrastructure, we're looking to improve our infrastructure across a range of portfolios, but good luck finding a diesel mechanic or a fabricator today. So there's a whole set of skills that New Zealand's going to need if we're going to, one, at least stabilise where we are, and secondly, if we're going to progress, we are going to be reliant on workforce from offshore.
Do you have any concerns about how this offshore workforce could affect the pandemic?
So if we have appropriate settings at the border and a really good information and education, then the current settings are for a more relaxed border, and so that would encourage work coming. Having said that, we do have an expectation that we may get an increase in influenza, forbidden measles, some of the other things that we haven't seen for the past 2 years as a concept of relaxing those borders. So that is a concern. We can only do our best at remedying that with a good education and good policies.
That was Anika speaking to Dr. Shane Reddy.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.